Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I am just so pleased because my guest again, but not since January, is Dr. Lori Buckley. Hello, Dr. Lori.
Hello, Dr. Diana. How are you?
Oh, good. And Dr. Lori and I have known each other for a long time, and we're friends and colleagues, and it's always fun to do a show that's kind of easy like this because we know each other, and I so appreciate your book, 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Happy Relationship, and I want our listening audience to know that Lori Buckley is a licensed psychologist and an ASECT certified sex therapist. ASECT stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is, and that's why they have the acronym ASECT.
Exactly. And it's so good to be here talking to you. I love talking to you and being on your show. So much fun.
Well, thank you. I love talking to you too. And the book is really excellent. You talk about decision making and decide to keep going. And when we had our pre-interview off the air, we decided to talk for this show about couples wanting to relight the fire, no matter their age or how long they've been together. And I will self-disclose just a little bit that Lori and I are both getting our second or perhaps third chances in happy, sexy relationships.
Who's counting? But, you know, we keep doing it till we get it right. And, you know, I think the main thing we were talking about, and it's such an important message that I want everybody to know, because it's one of the things I hear, and I know you do as well, all the time, about how people just, you know, they buy into this myth and this belief, false belief, that as we get older or as we have long-term relationships, that, you know, sex basically, you know, goes down the tubes, you know, goes into the toilet, so to speak.
Yeah.
And people, when they accept that and resign to that as if it is fact, it's problematic in the sense that they stop trying and they just go, oh, well, this is the way it's supposed to be. And, you know, you and I both know, as because we live it, we experience it every day with our clients, that is absolutely not the case. And that's really what we're talking about today.
That's what we're talking about today. And I think that more mature relationships, but of course we have many younger listeners, and so stay tuned, really pay attention, because you can prevent a lot of problems if you do this. But I think with mature relationships, often the folks have decided that they're too old for games. And maybe even, for the lucky ones, too horny for wasting any more time.
Absolutely. And you know what? We're all too old, for no matter how young you are, to play games. You know, our life, our hearts, our bodies are way too precious to be, you know, wasting it in whatever way that is, or giving our hearts or our bodies to somebody maybe that doesn't deserve it, or allowing our bodies and our hearts to be, I'm going to say, compromised, because that's what we think we're supposed to do. And, you know, really it's just about demanding more in our life and doing the things that we can do at any age to assure that we have exactly what it is that we want.
Yeah, if we remain in a happy relationship that really has good sex, the quality of life is going to be so much better, and we will live longer, no doubt, if we have this.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Good for our well-being, mentally and physically, and I think that's proven, although I don't have any specific studies to quote. It doesn't matter. I think we all know it to be true intuitively.
Yeah, there are actually a number of studies. I am I don't actually mention this too much on this show, which is now in its going on close to 5 years, that I'm also a gerontologist. So for quite a long time, I've studied aging and sexuality. And so I'm very interested in it. And, of course, the older I get, the more personally I'm interested in it. With my late husband, Charlie, and now with Brian, my darling man, I think we're fortunate because we practiced and now practice an endless courtship. And knowing how a good relationship with great sex works, and I suspect you can say the same, I am a better, more authentic marriage counselor and sex therapist, because knowing lots about human sexuality has helped increase my sexual confidence. And so all of that is, those are pluses.
Yeah, it all feeds upon each other, right? We can have the knowledge, mm-hmm. but the knowledge without the experience, it's lacking something. And the knowledge makes our experiences richer, and then, of course, the experiences that we have increases our knowledge. So it's just this synergistic thing that happens as we continue to learn, continue to grow, and experience life. And again, if we were to allow ourselves to resign to, thinking that, we can't do this, or we can't have that, or this is the way it's supposed to be, well, then we would stop growing and we'd stop learning. So it's important to know that, we can have the kind of relationship and the kind of sex that we want. Again, whether we're young or whether we're old, if that's what we want and we put forth the effort, but we need to have the tools and the knowledge to do exactly that. So that's what we're going to do today, right? We're going to give some knowledge and some things that people can do to actually have a great sex life at any age.
At any age. In your book, 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship, your first chapter is about decisions, and you write, "It's an interesting fact, making the decision to become a more loving partner usually creates a more loving relationship." There's a lot of truth to that. It's the intention, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And then acting on it.
Yeah, as opposed to waiting around for our partner to do something. Right? So it puts us in a more empowered position rather than, what is that noise?
I don't know.
Hopefully it's not coming from me. Anyways, it puts us in an empowered position to do something about our lives and be an active participant rather than waiting to see what happens.
Yes. Absolutely. And you say in chapter 11, and this figures so well into our discussion for the program, decide to keep going. And you write, relationships that don't move forward and what stagnates dies. And that's really true. You have to decide that you're going to keep going. And I think it would be helpful for us to talk about ways that people can relight the fire, no matter their age or how long they've been in a relationship.
Yeah, I think that is important. So the first thing that we talked about is knowing that you can, if that's what you want. I mean, to be fair, there are people who get older or they're in longer-term relationships and they feel that things are okay the way they are. They don't feel, that both of them are in agreement, so we're not talking to those people.
We're not. We don't see them. They're happy.
Exactly. Although, more often than that, the case is that there's usually one person that isn't quite as happy as the other person. And so if we have one person in a relationship that isn't satisfied with what's going on sexually or emotionally or relationally, well, then the other person ultimately isn't really getting what they want either. So, it's possible for two people to be in the same place of not wanting to have better sex or improve their relationship, but I think more often than not, it's one or both people who would like to have something better,
if they actually knew that they could, then they would do something about it. So that's the first step, knowing that you can. And then the second one is, okay, so what do you actually do to make those relationships flourish, to make them grow and heat them up? Like you say, ignite the fire. And it's really not as difficult as people might think, although if you've been in a relationship for a very long time that has been lacking in any kind of sexual activity, of course we need to say that that's going to be more challenging. And if you are in that position, you know, we have to also mention that we are therapists and there is a place to actually go to therapy if that's something that you need. You know, it's always good to read a book or listen to a show because sometimes that's all you need. You just need a few little tips and a few little, you know, really pushing points or things that you can do to really make a difference. But sometimes it needs a little bit more than that. And in that case, you know, you want to go see somebody like us, a sex therapist, a relationship therapist who specializes in sexual issues to help get you past that bump.
Well, exactly. And I give my clients things to read. I know you give your clients your book, which is so good.
Well, and other books as well. I recommend
yes,
lots
of course.
Of books. Yeah.
There are lots of books, but sometimes giving clients counseling and then asking them to do homework assignments like a sensual touch, and we can talk about that, will help. And then if they don't do their homework, it's kind of fun to explore what the resistance was. Well, it's not always fun. Sometimes it's painful.
Well, necessary. It's necessary.
It's necessary, but a lot of times couples will feel that they need to be accountable so that they're extra spurred on to do what the therapist tells them to do.
Right.
And if they don't and they say this is too much work, my experience is, and fortunately this doesn't happen too often, but then they'll drop out of counseling. And but if couples do the work, really talk about their relationship and do the homework and read materials, and they're much more likely to get back on track and reignite their sex life, their relationship.
Yeah, and you used a really important word. You said accountability, and that's so important. So whether it's with a therapist or just to yourself, really, it certainly could be to your partner, but really making that commitment to yourself. And, you know, let's just, you know, put it out there that no one's going to do what it takes to do anything, to accomplish anything, if they're not motivated. So, you know, again, it needs to be something that you really want and that you believe can happen. And if you have that, the desire, then, you know, then you'll do what it takes. And, you know, we can talk about that in anything in life. And you need that motivation. And if you have that motivation, then you make that commitment to yourself, to your partner, to your therapist, if that's what it takes. But ultimately, the person that matters most is yourself. You know, if you're going to make any kind of goal or commitment, to know that you're willing to do what it takes. And it's not always a smooth road. You know, like you said, sometimes it doesn't work out the way you want, or maybe you're having some trouble just even approaching the topic with your partner. And I'd imagine there's a lot of people listening who are thinking, yeah, this would be great. I would really like to do this, but I know my partner's never going to go for it. Like, how do I even say this? What can I possibly say to my partner to let them know that I'm not really happy with our relationship or our sex life? And that's a very difficult thing for a lot of people.
And so what do you suggest if you have either the woman or the man who's calling with this problem? What do you suggest to how you approach the more resistant partner?
You know, it's always good to come from a place from your heart and from the form of a request.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking from your heart, you know, rather than saying, you know, we never, or why don't we, or why
mm-hmm.
don't you, or, you know, not in the sort of critical tone, but in a loving tone where, wow, you know, I really miss what we used to have. And
mm-hmm.
I would love it if we could, you know, be more sexual with one another, if we could feel more connected. And is there, you know, a way that we can have this conversation, that we can figure something out? Because I really miss that connection and that, you know, you could say physical connection, you could say those sexual feelings, you know, whatever feels comfortable for you, to let your partner know that it's not a complaint, it's a request. And it really is there because there's something you want with your partner. Now, it's possible that you can say it in the most loving way, and it still may be hard to hear for your partner, because let's face it, you know, it's not a stretch to think that your partner might feel that you've been maybe unhappy for a long time, or maybe that they haven't been doing something, you know, we'll say right or good enough. But ultimately, it's getting through that conversation and having it, even though it might be a difficult one, so you two can find a place to make some changes, some very small changes that could make big differences. And there's certainly a lot of them that you can do in the book. But let's talk about some of the things that you can do right now. So we've already talked about the first one being the conversation. I mean, that's
the first one is the conversation. That's right. Let's make this very practical. First the conversation, but kind of overarching all, I think that to relight the fire is to go places and do things that you've never done before. And
right.
that can increase dopamine, the hormone of arousal, which needs some novelty. So you have to trick the brain into believing that you're having variety within your, for many people, their monogamous relationship. You got to shake up the normal routine.
Exactly. And you know, we could say it's sort of getting unstuck or out of your rut, or even just having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe it's doing things that you used to do but haven't done them in a long time.
Yes.
So it's not just doing what is automatic, because as we know, what does happen automatically is we do get kind of set in our ways, and it is easier to sit down and watch TV than it is to, you know, maybe, you know, initiate sex, especially if there's a chance that we might get rejected or it may not turn out well. And I think that's what happens to a lot of people who are older or in longer-term relationships. You know, unfortunately, it even happens with young people in newer relationships. It's just sometimes easier to avoid something that can be so intimate and potentially scary. And so it's, again, it is making that decision to do something. So whether it's doing something new or adventurous or fun, it's what it's doing is it's really getting them out of that routine, out of that rut. And, you know, that's just the beginning. Once you do it, it feels really good, and then you keep wanting to do those kinds of things in bed and out of bed.
Absolutely. And we haven't used the word romance, but I know that perhaps more women than men, but they long for some romance to be part of their relationship. And
yes.
So how to restore the romance? And you and I think both will suggest that couples schedule date nights and they work at talking about each other, not about the kids.
Yeah.
And then they also might unplug at night, turning off all the electronic devices so that
Absolutely.
They can focus on each other.
Yeah, and you know, all of those things accomplish one thing, really, if you think about it just sort of in a broad sense. It is making an effort. You know, it's showing your partner that you care enough to light a candle, to listen to them rather than be, you know, looking at your emails on your phone, that you are intuitive enough or loving enough to want to do something to make them happy, that you're going to go out of your way to do something, to be interested in them rather than just talking about, you know, the bills or the kids. So it's knowing that somebody really gives a crap, you know, just to kind of put it out there. I mean, that's really what it is. It doesn't really take a lot sometimes. It's amazing the change that I see with couples who just decide to give each other a kiss, hello, when they walk in the door.
Exactly.
So simple. Yeah.
And I had a friend say, you know, when he walks into the house with flowers, I get all fluttery because it means I thought of you before I hit the door. And
exactly.
Yeah, that he was thinking about her and flowers. Most women really like flowers unless they're allergic. But they really like.
You know, we do like flowers, but even bigger than the flowers is knowing that, you know, you did something. You went out of your way to do something that you knew would make us happy. And men need it, too. You know, it's not just women.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you're mentioning that because men absolutely need it, too. Well, my late husband, Charlie, was pretty, he was wise. And I remember his saying, men really are not as complicated as many think we are. Because men love to hear that their women are happy and that they are the source, that they are the source of their happiness. And of course, we love to be complimented.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think Charlie nailed it. Ultimately, and I see it all the time, and, you know, the more I do this work, the more I'm convinced it to be true, that what men ultimately want is for their partner to be happy. And, you know, we have these sort of stereotypes or these ways that we think of men, you know, they just want sex, they're out for one thing, you know, all of these horrible kind of ideas that we were fed somewhere along the line. I don't know. Hopefully not everybody feels that way, but I do know that those are some common thoughts. And in my experience, as I work with a lot of men, I really do believe it to be true that ultimately, of course not all, but the majority of men I think are good and really want nothing more than for their women to be happy. And don't react well when they see that their wife or you know, their love interest is unhappy.
Yes, and I think we need to remember that men are born of women, and many will spend the rest of their lives yearning for a woman's acceptance and approval. In general, Lori, you and I see this with our clients and even with our friends. The deepest principle of human nature is the craving to be appreciated.
Absolutely, absolutely. We all want to be seen, appreciated, loved. All of those things. And, you know, we're talking about, as we usually do, you know, predominantly men and women relationships, but certainly this is true for same-sex relationships as well. And
yes, I'm glad you're bringing that up, because I did hear from a gay listener saying that he felt that too often the conversations on this program were sort of heterosexually oriented. And I responded that way a little defensively, perhaps, but that what's true for a man and a woman can be true for same-sex relationships, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I think you and I do tend to, you know, be somewhat heterocentric because that is, well, one, you know, we just happen to be heterosexual, but also, you know, I would say probably 75 to 80% of my clients are. But I do find, while there certainly are some differences, just like there are some differences between all men and all women and all couples, you know, generally speaking, they're very, very similar.
Yes, and I have found in working with homosexual people that I often will give a similar homework assignment, but maybe some adjustments depending upon anatomy.
Right.
And
no G-spot searching when it comes to
yeah, exactly. So, but you know, for any couples, any people, the biology of romance is as much a product of their minds as it is of their bodies. The brain part of it is pretty important. You know, people will talk about romance and the tingly feeling. It's in the brain of the beholder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a very subjective thing. You know, the saying, you know, treat somebody the way you want to be treated. You know, I always say, no, that's absolutely wrong. You want to treat somebody the way they want to be treated or love them in the way that they want to be loved. And, you know, we kind of get get caught up in, I do all these things, I do this and I do that, and I, you know, and all of this long list of all the things that we're doing to love our partner, and yet, you know, oftentimes they may not be feeling loved. And so rather than take that personally, to be able to really look at what it is that our partner wants, but also if we're on the other side of it and we're not feeling loved, to also recognize that our partner is loving us in their way, and to come from a place of gratitude and appreciation for that as well.
Gratitude and appreciation, exactly. And if we're an older couple, I think that sometimes confidence can be very romantic, that you're not going to be playing games,
mm-hmm.
and you're perhaps not as interested in playing the field or experimenting around, because you kind of know what you want. And that can be very satisfying.
Well, you know what you want, and if you have a good person, and I'll just, you know, speak from, you know, my own experience in life, you know, as well as what I see with my clients. But
yes,
personally, I will say, you know, when you find a good person when you're older, and you know what that is, you know, sometimes we don't know what that is when we're younger.
We recognize it.
We recognize it and we appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, really important, not to take that for granted. And I mean, that's what happens. We're going to talk about long-term relationships. That's what happens in a lot of long-term relationships too. You know, we work really hard at the beginning, right, to get this person to want us, to get this person to love us, to have sex with us, to marry us, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we, you know, quote unquote have them, you know, then the effort pretty much stops, and we just think, well, it's supposed to, and that's where everything goes awry. And so the message that we're giving today is no, absolutely, that's not the case. You have to continuously and consistently make an effort. I'm going to say every day. Sometimes I say day by day effort, but certainly it's also true moment by moment, you know, where we can make one decision or another. You know, we could speak up or not. And sometimes we need to speak up, and sometimes we need to not, you know.
Yeah, right.
Really, really, you know, knowing what those things are. It's just really speaking our truth from a place of love and our self-love and for our appreciation of our partner. But like you said, we know what we want as we get older. We appreciate what we have, and we also have the confidence to be able to speak up, I believe.
Be able
and hopefully
to speak up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking up is important. You know, I just saw a client really just about an hour ago,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, she is just this beautiful, beautiful inside and out woman, and she learned from a very early age it's not safe to speak up. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's just
yeah, not safe.
Happy. And, you know, in the end, what happens is when you avoid speaking up and, you know, you're not letting your partner know what it is that you need or you want, and, you know, you are not only miserable, but your partner isn't getting what they deserve either. So it actually creates a very, we'll say, easy going, perhaps, not easy, but easy going, sort of a non-conflicting relationship, but not a happy relationship. Not so happy,
no. Well, we have so much to talk about. We're going to go to the break here shortly. But Lori, when you were on the program last January, you offered your book to the first caller. So is that, can we do that again?
We can. You give us a call. We'll give you a
okay,
call.
Okay, so if anybody has a question for Dr. Lori Buckley, and she's a very wise woman, you can tell just from listening to her, please, after the break, call 888-874-4888. And our dear producer will find out who you are and perhaps put you on the air. But in any case,
get to the book.
Dr. Lori and I will continue to talk about relighting.
Yes, specific steps. We're going to give those.
We're going to do some more specific steps in how you reignite a relationship. Because, again, no matter your age or how long you've been in a relationship, a lot of relationships feel a little stagnant and like
it
they
doesn't
need...
It doesn't take long, either. It can become stagnant in a matter of months.
Yes. Say a little bit more about that before, in 1 minute before we go to the break. In a matter of months, what?
Yeah, people get caught in those routines really, really quickly. As a matter of fact, sometimes before we even meet someone. So, you know, you're used to having sex a certain way, and you believe that this is what women want or what men want. And so you do it that way, and, you know, especially if you're younger, I think, you know, people don't necessarily speak up and say, mm-hmm. oh, I don't really like that, or I wish you would do it this way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we do this thing, and we get a moan or some kind of a positive reinforcement.
Right,
and
right.
Rightly or wrongly, and we continue to do that. And so we stick with what we know, our very narrow point of reference of what sex is or what we believe it is or how to be in a relationship, and it happens almost instantly in many cases.
Yes, I've noticed that as well.
Yeah.
Well, we have more to talk about because Dr. Lori Buckley and I always do, and we hope that you're enjoying this program and learning from it, because that's our intention, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. So stay with us, and we'll be right back after the break. We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter, here with Dr. Lori Buckley, who is the author of a wonderful book, 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. That's a brilliant book, Lori. It's wonderful. And I'd like to just shift the conversation a little bit, because when we talk about the sexuality of older women, it seems to me that there is an American ambivalence about it. The idea that older women are as interested in sex as older men. Well, it just would not be as surprising in Italy or in France or other parts of Europe.
Yeah.
And I think it has to do with our, in America, our strangely puritanical yet sex-obsessed country. It's an odd paradox, isn't it? That people are shocked that, you know, it's just that older women might be sexual.
Yes, it's absolutely true, and that they can be, and so can men. You know, it's also something I hear so often, and it's always still, even though I hear it so often, a bit surprising that I'll have, you know, men come in who are in their 40s and 50s even, and say, well, yeah, you know, things aren't working, you know, the way they used to, but. You know, that's just the way it's supposed to be. You know, it's just, again, sort of resigned to the fact that, you know, maybe they're not, you know, desiring sex as much, or maybe they're not able to get an erection, you know, as quickly or as easily. And in some ways, yes, that's true. The problem becomes when they feel that, oh, because of those things, because I'm getting older, that sex is no longer a viable part of my life or my relationship anymore. That's where it becomes problematic.
Yes, and it's sort of the idea that sex is intercourse. And,
exactly.
I think you and I both will, depending upon the couple, take the emphasis off of penetration and sort of share with all of the other possibilities there are, including the fact that sex does not have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Exactly, exactly. Or you know, or just switching it all around. You know, it's so really non-concrete. It's abstract. It's something that we can create to be whatever it is that we want. And like you said, because people are so focused on intercourse and believing that is what sex is, and that's really the main goal or the main event, it really does, I think, prevent them from having a really exciting sex life. So I know that you probably do what I do for many couples sometimes, and this is a great step to take, just saying no intercourse. You know, everything else goes, but no intercourse. So, you know, don't worry about erections. Forget about erections. Forget about orgasms. Just be together in a way that feels good. And whatever that means, you can touch, you can kiss, but you're going to just sort of forbid that one piece of the puzzle creates a much more exciting experience for a lot of people.
It really does, and it takes the pressure off. If the guy is having erectile dysfunction or even premature ejaculation, so if intercourse is off the table, so to speak, then there, and it can also really inform the couple that there are so many other erotic possibilities from the top of our heads to the bottom of our toes.
Yeah.
And some people indeed get stuck between the legs. There are these other possibilities. Erotic.
So many.
Touch.
Yeah. It's endless. It's endless, the amount of possibilities. So it gives them a chance to, you know, one, get rid of all that pressure just to be able to be in the moment and enjoy the experience. But also, like you said, to discover things that maybe they haven't discovered before about their own pleasure as well as their partner's.
Yes, and when I talk about the realm of total abandon, there are certain limitations for women if they're only the responsive female,
mm-hmm.
and they take only this role in sex, because I find that a lot of them, and especially this is true for older women who think that, you know, it's not ladylike to initiate, or they just only know how to be done too. So they have sort of a narrow sex drive, but being on your back with your legs up, it's what I call the dead cockroach position. That's a really bad image, isn't it? Usually it affords the woman very little direct stimulation. In the places that do her the most good, right? So it really helps for the... And then I'm thinking about a study of, it was just a small study, 500 men, but the thing that they wanted most in their woman was enthusiasm and
yep.
a woman who would initiate sex more. So sometimes getting a little more knowledge about sexuality will help this woman with her confidence. And even watching Great Sex for a Lifetime, which you and I narrated for the Sinclair Institute.
Right. And that's a great film. It's a mm-hmm. great way to get some, you know, some good, of course, there's some expert commentary, you know, but this just, you also get to hear people, regular people and couples talking about their sex life, and then you get to also actually see what that looks like. And I do think that those are great tools for people to start the conversations and to go, hey, yeah, I feel that way too, or what do you think about that? Or, hey, that looks kind of fun. Let's try that one. So those, you know, instructional films, BetterSex.com has from the Sinclair Institute can be a great tool that I, you know, give a lot of my clients to watch, and a lot of them find it really, really helpful.
Absolutely. It does start conversations. And I even give out a review sheet. Seeing this film, I felt embarrassed, not at all, somewhat, very much so. Sad, all kinds of emotions, and they get to rate it right after, and then that helps with discussions too.
Yeah, I love that. It's a great idea.
Yeah, and you've done a lot of films for the Sinclair Institute, way more than I have. I mean, I've done maybe 5 or 6 over the years, but I think you've done more than that. Not that I'm being competitive here, if I'm not.
And your point, Diana.
What?
And your point. No, I like doing them. I we both believe in them, and, you know, mm-hmm. I feel very fortunate to have been able to do that and offer that to couples, which is, you know, look, you and I, what we both have in common is a real desire to help people and to show people that they can enjoy their bodies, their relationships in ways that they really don't even know. We don't know what we don't know, right? And
exactly.
And again, the thing that I want more than anything out of this show is if people leave with only one thing, one bit of information, and that is, with some effort, you can have a great sex life no matter what your age, no matter how long you've been in a relationship. Well, that's the starting point. Because without that, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. So once they have that knowledge and that belief, and we challenge that false belief and that myth of, oh, it all goes downhill. Because in fact, as you and I know, not only does it not go downhill, with effort and desire, it gets better and better. And better. Different and better.
Absolutely. So you say it very well. So let's repeat that. With some effort, you can have a good sex life no matter your age. But it's all about intention and making that decision. Your book is all about decisions.
Got to make the decision, and you got to know why you want that. And then it's just doing the things. So what have we talked about? We've talked about maybe having that discussion, that conversation, maybe a difficult one, but an important one, to say, hey, I miss us. I miss what we used to have.
I miss us, yes.
Yeah, I want to feel connected with you. I want us to have, you know, hot, exciting sex. That's what I want. And, you know, can we find a way that we can do that? Maybe it's more frequent. But ultimately, if it is focused on the quality rather than the quantity, because I find a lot of people get caught up in the quantity, oh, it has to be this many times. If it's focused on the quality, then we will have it more often because it becomes more enjoyable. And that's what happens when the quality goes down, then we desire it less. So, you know, another thing we talked about was taking intercourse off the table and focusing more on the pleasure and trying different things. And that's a really good step. And the other one that you mentioned, and I think we have to say it because it's probably one of the most important, especially for long-term relationships, is to schedule it. And it's really important. And so I know that kind of goes against what I just said about quantity and quality, but we do need to have that intention and create an environment that, you know, that gives us a success, that gives us a good experience. And if we're just kind of waiting for the right moment to, you know, seduce our partner or to have sex, then, you know, we don't have sex at all. So that's not going to work because the right moment really rarely happens. And, you know, I think of the right moment as, you know, two people being horny and wanting to have sex at that exact same moment in the exact same way. And, you know, let's face it, that only happens at the beginning of relationships and sometimes not even then, but usually at the beginning. And very rarely does that happen when you're in a long-term relationship. So scheduling it is a way of letting your partner know, hey, this is important to me. It's so important that I'm going to put it on my calendar, and let's make this night our night. Not necessarily our night to have intercourse, not necessarily our night to have, you know, an orgasm, but our night to carve out this space and time where we can be sexual, where we can connect physically and sensually together and have some fun. And that's an important thing. And, you know, I think, you know, again, it's such a subjective thing, and it's really about the couple deciding what is best for them. But I really recommend twice a week, because if it's less than that, I mean, if it's not doable and you can only do once a week, then that's great. And if you want to do three times a week, that's great too. But twice a week I find to be really good because, let's face it, sometimes some experiences are better than others because there's too many unforeseen variables that we can't control about whether it's going to be a good experience. You know, maybe we're just so exhausted, or we're just not feeling well physically, or, you know, we just had a really hard day. You know, the kids are away. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen. So if we know that we're going to be having sex again in another few days, then it doesn't seem quite so big. It just sort of alleviates the pressure. And what's nice about that, knowing that that you can count on those 2 days that you're going to connect physically and sensually and possibly sexually, it does also kind of take away the noise the other days where you don't have to worry, oh, should I initiate? Oh, is he or she going? Do they want to have sex? It just sort of, it takes away all of that noise that many couples tend to hear, you know, all of the time. It's just that chatter in their head about, you know, what if or should I? Or so, you know, you can count on those nights. You can, you know, prepare if it's something with the kids or if it's around, you know, when you're going to eat or your work day or whatever it is, to create an environment and, you know, again, to be able to have some control over the variables that you can to create a good positive experience with one another.
Precisely. And our friend and colleague Stella Resnick talks about sex without sex. And what she means by that is the appeal of your sexual contact is eroticism and not intercourse. And mm-hmm. when I think about the realm of seduction, and you've seen this, I've seen it, committed couples are often not sexually playful unless they're available for intercourse. So
yeah.
rather than flirt or act seductive or woo their partners into bed, they'll agree to intercourse beforehand
yeah.
and then meet
yeah.
in the bedroom to play out this sort of accepted formula, but without the flirting and the teasing and the seduction. And so the couple is missing out on something very basic to our human sexuality.
And fun. You know, it's fun.
And so fun.
Yeah,
I love the question you ask a lot of your new couples. I still remember that when I visited you, in Southern California quite a few years ago. You said one of the first questions you'll ask a new couple is, when was the last time you two had any fun?
Yeah, I still ask that question.
I know. It's a very, and I've adopted it. It's a very good, because sometimes they'll look at each other and scratch their heads. They
yeah,
haven't had
more
any
often
fun.
Than not. Yeah, we forget to have fun. And it's important to have fun outside of the bedroom, too, because when we're having fun and we're relaxed and we're connected outside of the bedroom, then it makes us want to have sex more, too.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it works both ways, too, though, right? When we're having fun in the bedroom, we tend to be more playful outside of it as well. It's an important thing, and it's not about intercourse or orgasms. It's about that being naked and vulnerable and playful and, you know, just sensual. I mean, just being in our sexual, sensual self, feeling, you know, like full people rather than kind of numbing part of ourselves off, which I think a lot of people do.
They do, and they often have fears,
mm-hmm.
which sometimes need to be addressed, of course, in the counseling sessions.
Yep.
Most women will have much better sex if they feel safe. And
right.
And, I mean, I think it's kind of hardwired into female brains. They want to feel safe.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're opening up our, not just our legs, but our soul, you know. And you know, it's somewhat true for men, but I don't think as true for men as women.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something just physically, we are literally opening up our bodies.
Yeah.
And if you're not feeling safe, And you know, I do think that this is important to say, I think a lot of women have sex because, not because they want to, because they feel they should. They are doing it from a place of fear. It's like, oh, if I don't, he's not going to be happy, or this is what
mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to do. And
it's
what
obligation.
They're doing is, yeah, they're having sex and they're not aroused.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have sex without being sufficiently aroused, It's like a violation of your body. So
mm-hmm.
you're creating, even though it may not be unsafe, you're kind of creating your brain and your body to feel unsafe because it's not prepared. It's not prepared
mm-hmm.
emotionally. It's not prepared physically.
Mm-hmm.
And so women do that over time, and you do that, you know, over months, years, even weeks, and it creates an environment that, you know, you are no longer desiring sex because sex becomes a very unpleasant experience. And it is also an unpleasant experience for the man because he is not getting a turned on woman who is desiring him or into it. And so that's really kind of the beginning of the sexless marriage, I believe.
I think that's right. And what we know is that a lot of times, I think many times, that desire does not precede arousal, that the woman needs to be aroused first, and then
exactly.
the desire may kick in.
Right, and she has to give herself that, they both do, you know, both people in the relationship, give the woman that space and time to get aroused. So for her, it's really up to her, not her partner, to be able to say, okay, you know, one, to allow herself to surrender, to, you know, open up and to be in the moment and give her that space and time and to let her partner know what it is that she needs and wants and not to do anything that she doesn't want to do. And knowing that, you know, she doesn't have to feel horny before, have that desire before she has sex, because most of the time she's not. It is going to take some time for her to, like you said, get aroused so that she then has the desire to have sex. That little bit of knowledge gives her that space to allow herself that space and time to accomplish that. If she goes in and thinking, okay, I'm just going to get this over with, or I'm just going to
do it. Oh, and so many women do that, at least the ones that I see in my practice.
Right. Well, yeah, those are the ones we see, right?
That's the ones we see, yes.
Because they're okay. So it's, and I always, it's one of the first things I tell these women, don't do anything you don't want to do. And mm-hmm. know, and you'll find this out over time. It may not, you know, it may take a little bit of time, but you will learn that if you do allow yourself that time and that space to enjoy what's happening, to be fully present and in the moment, and to let your partner know how you want to be touched or where you want to be touched, you know, and to enjoy touching him or her as well, then you will find that desire will come. It will come because they think that they've lost their libido, right? It's like, I have no libido. It's like, it's all gone. It's not gone. They just don't allow themselves that space to be able to feel it.
You said to be fully present, and lots of women are not fully present. They're multitasking because they don't really want to be there. And men too, but
men
don't
too.
Don't you find it's a little more women, but to not be fully present. And to be fully present means you're going to have much better sex.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
but you said men too. So what's your experience with men?
Well, men who are having difficulties with their erections.
Yes, that's right.
Coming too quickly, you're not coming quickly enough. All
mm-hmm.
of those things, they're so in their head, you know, trying to do something. Maybe they're trying to give her an orgasm. Maybe they're trying to get an erection. Maybe they're trying not to come. What they're doing is they're so in their head, and usually what they end up creating is the thing that they want to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's the early ejaculators who are so in their head that continue to ejaculate early because they're so out of touch with what's actually going on. They're so unaware of their body because they're so in their head. And, you know, there's no person that can't benefit, you know, in so many ways, but certainly sexually, from learning to be in the moment and just fully experiencing that level of pleasure, physical and emotional.
It's
and so,
so
that's another
delicious.
Step. The what?
It's so delicious. If one can stay in the moment.
It's
but
everything.
But that's
it's
why
everything.
We give some of our guys homework assignments where they masturbate, stop, start, and they pay attention to what's going on in with their penises, and they're not thinking about other things. They're thinking about the sensations so that they can better learn how they respond and what their levels of arousal are.
Be aware of their body. And so the other step that they can take, that a couple can take, is what we were talking about before, you know, pleasurable touch.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just being together without any, you know, any genital touching, any sexual interaction, just learning to be touched or touch your partner with the primary focus of pleasure.
Oh, the primary focus of pleasure, indeed. That's it.
I mean, isn't that what it's all about?
That's what it's all about. And when we have pleasure, and especially I can say this as an older woman, I feel like the pleasure that I get to experience with now my fiancé, he's such a delicious man. It is my... Thank you. You've got a good one, too. And I'm so happy because we're going to get to all see each other in a couple of months. That'll be fun. But it's so... I consider... The fact that it's like a fountain of youth for me, that to have with orgasms come this mix of oxytocin and endorphins and just so many good feelings.
It is. It's not just physical pleasure. It is pleasure, right? Physical pleasure is a big part of it, but it's also that emotional pleasure, that connection, that
right.
It's so rich. It's incredible, you know? And when we're so in our head, we miss it. We miss the whole point. And so if we're trying to do anything, we're trying to have an orgasm, we're trying not to have an orgasm, we're trying to make our partner happy, we want to get it over with. I mean, when we're not there, then really, what's the point? So it's a skill, really, and it's not something that is, as we would imagine, you know, instinctive intuitive. It really is a skill, and that's why getting older is actually a good thing in this case, because as we get older, if we want, we can continue to learn, we can continue to grow, and experience things that we never even knew, you know, were possible. And so that's what we want the listeners to know. We want you to know there are things that you can't imagine, feelings that you could feel, that you can experience sexually and relationally if you know that it exists and you want it and you make the effort to do it.
Two experienced people who have a past and yet everything is still possible.
Yep, we're living proof, and
yes,
you know,
and
see it every day in our offices.
I know. And Dr. Lori, I'm hearing the music. That means we have to bring the program to a close.
Oh, shoot.
Thank you. Will you come back again? I mean, I'll be in touch with you. So you're just the most wonderful guest. And
you're the most wonderful host. Thank you so much again for having me on your show. I really, really enjoyed speaking with you.
Oh,
and
thank you.
We were able to help out some people. And it's unfortunate that nobody called to get my book, but you can get it at Amazon.com. So
good.
Check it out if you need some extra tips. But you just use the ones we gave you, and I think you'll be on your way.
I think so, too. And I like your – I'm quoting your book. Live with intention and you'll live a life of joy. Now keep going. That's a great message. Thanks again, Lori.
Thank you, Diana. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye.